Anyway, everybody, it is Lance Dawson, who, along with my co-host Andrew Stewart, welcoming you to Backstage Lowdown, where we get a chance to talk to all sorts of talented individuals, people in the music industry, the entertainment industry, or even the supportive industries that support those type of businesses and ventures. Today, we have an amazing guest. Sam Hilfer is here. He is a musician. He is a producer, a songwriter, and I've had the pleasure of getting to know him for a few years now, and he's going to join us on Backstage Lowdown. So here we go. Backstage Lowdown. Sam, welcome to the show, buddy.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure. We've actually talked about you on the show more than once. So
more than once.
More so than I figured once. It's about time to actually have you on the show.
Yes.
All right.
So that our four listeners will understand who it is we're talking about.
So, I mean, well, I imagine that when you spoke with Amanda Kind recently.
Yes.
And I'm working on her album right now with her. So I assume I came up then.
You did come up then. And nice. I think that there was another reference to you. I don't think anyone's going to do a deep dive and go back to our other episodes.
No, so don't worry about it.
I think it was
so
probably me. I think that I was talking about Sam in some reference, but it was all in good context anyway.
Sure.
So congratulations on the work that you're doing with Amanda. We featured Easier and talked about that a little while ago. So why don't we dive in with that? You're certainly working with Amanda, and that experience, Easier, is actually getting some radio play, I think, on CBC, right?
Yeah, it is.
Station.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's sort of kudos to you as well.
Yeah, we started working time is such a weird thing right now. It could have been 2 years ago, it could have been a year ago, sometime just before COVID, whenever that was. We started working together on her new album. We had done songwriting in the past before, you know, whether it was a song for the Glee choir that she works for or one of her own songs. And yeah, she reached out and said, hey, I want to seriously do this the best that I can do it. And that's always good to hear.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I don't want to turn this into, without Amanda here to defend herself, but is it an album, a vision project where, okay, here we want songs that address this because I want the album about this, or are they individual songs that once we have, 10 songs, say that's going to make up an album? Because I know Easier definitely had, she had a vision and a message and things she wanted to work through on, from a song writing standpoint. So which is it? Is it like a project or is it a collection?
So at first, when she approached me, it was, let's make an album.
Right.
And my advice to most people lately, especially if they haven't put anything out in a while or are a new artist, is to maybe not do an album.
Sure.
And instead do singles. And there's a few reasons for that. One is you get to experiment and try different things. You're not committed to a concept of a bunch of songs. You don't invest all the time and money in 12 songs and then put it out and no one likes it. You can kind of A/B test some stuff when you're putting it out.
Right.
Of course, this is all dependent on your goals. If your goal is to make an album, make an album. But if your goal is to have your music heard by a ton of people, then doing a single, when you release a single, you can submit it to Spotify playlists. When you do an album, you can submit a single to Spotify playlists.
So you're no further ahead.
Yeah, you're better off releasing 12 singles and submitting them all to Spotify playlists than releasing a song of 12 albums and submitting one.
Right.
So speak to
the landscape then of where we are, because I remember I'm going to use the word slightly older than you. and back in the day, people had favorite bands. They were favorite artists and they certainly had favorite albums that were purchased. That's no longer the case. I think people's attention span has changed dramatically in the music industry as a consumer. And I think that a lot of people, because there's now a tsunami of choice, it's so hard to garner any type of audience. So that would speak to your advice of saying it's better to throw out one song and see how that goes. And if you develop, a following, maybe it's going to take two songs, et cetera, rather than throw out an album where people are still only going to get that one song they might like. And now you got, 11 songs sitting around that you, what are you going to do with those?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I think attention span is a weird one because podcasts are growing in popularity, which require a significantly longer attention span. But then popular music singles are now topping charts at under 2 minutes. So really? There's this. Yeah, there's this weird split that's happening where some formats are getting longer and some are getting shorter and both are growing. Yeah. So
each has their market, their place.
Totally.
No, we were talking to another artist, a drummer with 30-odd-6, and he had discussed the fact that we are just going back to a singles market like there was in the 50s and the 60s. It was just all singles. And where for many years, we all bought albums, we bought our tapes and just listened to it from beginning to end. And now everybody just wants a single. They can go on, they can buy that one song. And then when that artist releases another single, they'll pick that one up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What about, so, and then also there's this concept too of these algorithms where you're turning your single over to Spotify or Apple iTunes, and somehow they have an algorithm that creates playlists for other people that hear, hey, this song seems to fit in with these other artists that you seem to like. So we're going to put these together. And I guess that works for the consumer, but then for the artist who's trying to create songs that, you know, are different or unique, and I don't know if that even exists anymore because there's only so many chords and progressions, but you know, you do your best to put out something refreshing and unique, and then it's kind of lumped into, well, that sounds just like this song. Let's put them together with a playlist. So what do you think about that, Sam? Is that sort of what you're finding or not so much?
You know what? It depends on the service. I think Spotify does a really good job of finding artists that maybe wouldn't have broken out otherwise. And I don't know specifically how they're doing it, if it's an algorithm, if it's people listening to stuff, if it's both. But I know people that, you know, put a song out and it gets put on a playlist random, like they submit it to playlists and it gets picked up. And then in a month, they went from having no listeners to 10,000 a month.
Wow.
And you know, that's not going to blow up and turn into I'm doing music full time necessarily, unless you find a way to really capitalize on that. But they have an audience that they didn't have a month ago. And all they did to get that was submit to Spotify playlists.
Wow. Well, that's pretty interesting, actually. So now you walk the line between, you're a producer, but you're also a musician and a songwriter on the other side of those things. Are you finding that your production stuff is kind of taking away from your own creative time, or are you trying to have a balance there?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly takes away from my creative time in terms of my own music, because I do have songs that I write for myself and that I produce for myself, but I also don't feel a big pull towards publishing that music of my own and putting it out there for people to hear it. I'm not like, oh, people have got to hear this new thing I just did. Whereas when I work on someone else's songs, I have a bit more of that. I'm like, oh, I want people to hear the thing we did together.
Right.
And I think it's because when I work on my own stuff, I'm not surprised with what I come up with necessarily. When I work with someone else, we come up with something that I maybe didn't think we would have come up with before. So for my own music, it's like, yeah, that's what I sound like. That's what I do. that's great. It's, you know, I like it and it's fulfilling, but it's not the most exciting. I'm not dying for people to hear it. But right. Yeah, other people's stuff, it's like, yeah, check out this thing I just did. I wouldn't have done it on my own.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. And when you're doing your own, you probably have a vision from the start, maybe that this is where I'm going to go down and that's the road, right?
Yeah, normally. Yeah. And there's less influences along the path to kind of pull you somewhere cool and try something different. Yeah. You kind of have to do that yourself, and that's harder.
Right. There's definitely some benefits for collaboration, right? So
yeah, it definitely goes both ways. I think if I had that in me, that hunger to just like, oh, everyone needs to hear this thing I just did, then yeah, right. I would want everyone to leave me alone and I'd want to work on my thing. but I don't have that in me currently. Maybe I will. You know, you never know. Things change.
Sure. Absolutely.
I recently have gotten into these YouTube studio tours with Andrew Masters, and yeah. Like, I can't stop watching it. And it kind of introduces you to the story that is the producer and gives you a little bit of background. And I know you came from singing, songwriting, and playing guitar before this. What's kind of your story with going from being a musician to actually now being a producer?
Yeah, my story, you know, it started when I was young. And if you kind of zoom out and look at it as a whole, I kind of started being a producer and a musician at the same time. You know, if you look at things at scale. So I started playing guitar when I was 10 or 11. I started writing songs when I was 13-ish. And I started wanting to record songs when I was 15-ish. So if you look at how long I've played guitar versus how long I've recorded, you know, I've been producing music for 15 years and I've been playing guitar for 16, 17. So like, it's really not...
Not that much of a difference.
It's really not that much of a difference.
Right. A little bit of a staggered start.
Yeah. Now, when I initially started producing, it was for myself. It was my own music. It was, you know, I can't afford to record stuff. So
well, as a 15-year-old kid, I mean, nobody can.
Right. Yeah. So it was how can I make my own music? How can I get it out there? And luckily, I had some good people that were able to, you know, give me at least the knowledge they had at the time to point me in the right direction and get me going, get me at least started. And then, yeah, at that point, I would write songs throughout the week while I was bored at school. And then on the weekend, I would record one and then it would go up on MySpace and people would listen to it.
Now, back then, in terms of having access to what is available that you can get now just off of when you buy a computer, that stuff didn't exist. How were you recording back then?
Yeah. So the first time I ever recorded anything that I played was on a like voice recorder tape machine. And I remember like my friends and I, you know, we got together and played some music, just, you know, a drummer and myself, and recorded it on tape and then brought the tape cassette to school. And we're like, listen to this is us playing and playing it back.
Sweet.
And then from there, it was recording on my grandma's like Windows 95 computer she used for bookkeeping with the little white microphone that came with it for voice calls.
Thanks, Grandma.
Yeah. And so I recorded a song using Audacity, which is still around. And then, yeah, then I moved into when my family kind of saw like, oh, this is a thing he's doing and we need to get a new computer for the family anyway. Why don't we talk to someone and make sure that he can at least record something with it? So made sure that we got a computer that had a sound card with a proper balanced input so that I could plug in a little mixer and record that way. And that's how I got started.
Wow. Awesome.
And is that kind of what you'd recommend to a young producer that's just starting out?
I mean, what I would recommend to a producer who's starting out is get a Mac, get Logic or Ableton, one of those bundles, because they both have a lot of sounds in them. So you've already got all the tools you need just by picking up one of those. Or even the Mac comes with GarageBand, and that's got a ton of stuff in it too. But if you know this is something you actually want to do, may as well just start with one of the pro utilities, especially when they are kind of like pretty affordable now. Like when I bought Logic Pro in 2009, it was like $800. And now I think it's like $350. I mean, it owes me nothing, but yeah, I would recommend get a Mac, get one of those pieces of software, and you can buy like a two-channel interface to plug a mic and a guitar in for $150.
Yep. And so, a couple mics and...
Yeah, you know, get one mic, learn it really well, get a DI box and call it a day.
There you go. So let me ask you this, Sam, because I'm trying to figure this out too, and you certainly know more than I do with regard to... The stopper for me is always, you know, you write a song, you can record a song. Now what? I never know, well, what do I do with this song? And I know you and Amanda have somehow figured that out. I know there's multiple ways of doing that. The question that I can't quite figure out in the new landscape is so you write a song and it gets, like you said, your friend's got 10,000 listeners now and they can't quit their day job on whatever, you know, check they might get out of that. How do the songwriters get paid anymore if nobody's actually buying songs? So somebody writes, or somebody comes to you and they record a song, but they didn't write it. Maybe you wrote it, or maybe a friend of theirs wrote it. How are they even in this equation anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it'll depend on the situation. Like there is still SoCan.
Right.
So a song gets played on the radio, whether it's Sirius satellite or, you know, actual radio. And they track it. And if your song is registered to SoCan with the proper percentages applied to you, you'll get pennies.
$10
pennies.
Check.
Yeah.
Yeah. $10. Wow. You're doing well.
Yeah. That's a number one.
Yeah. That's like killing it for a week.
Yeah.
So that's like the core, like you're going to get paid if it gets played. Right. But a lot of times there's an agreement to be paid for the songwriting. So like, yeah, you get credit, but you also get paid for services rendered.
Right, like a flat fee up front.
Just up front.
Yeah. So of course that depends on the relationship between the writer and the artist. It depends on a lot of things.
Right.
But I think, you know, you'll hear about like top line writers, right? Like the track's been produced and they get called in to write just the melody and the lyric.
Right.
And then maybe the track gets kind of redone with that new thing in mind. But yeah, like a top line writer would probably get paid writing credits and then also just have a flat rate for services.
Yeah. I don't know. I always find that stuff kind of interesting how iTunes really, you know, they changed the industry back in the day when they started, you know, digitizing and streaming music. And sort of with a promise and a handshake, it'll be okay, guys. Don't worry, they told the music industry. It'll be okay.
Well, I mean, part of from that, you know, the it'll be okay perspective was the way people were getting music digitally before that was for free.
That's true.
Right? So it was people are pirating
through Napster?
This. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, iTunes was a response to that. It was people are doing this anyway. Why don't we charge for it?
Right. And somehow kick Napster out.
Yeah, exactly. Somehow.
Yeah.
With Metallica's help.
With Metallica and maybe Taylor. I don't know. That was probably before her time.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, Sam, what's kind of the craziest experience you've had? You've now been recording different artists, local and maybe some not so local. Any what's the craziest experience you've had? And you can define crazy as good, bad, ugly, whatever you want.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a pretty high threshold for crazy. So not many things that might strike other people as crazy catch me as crazy.
Right.
So, you know, like when I started writing songs, you know, I started recording myself when I was 15. And then I was in a metal band with some friends in the late 2000s, early 2010s. So, you know, going on tour and playing Northern United States and Quebec and Ontario and that sort of stuff, lots of crazy, hilarious things that if a 18-year-old kid came up and asked if that was a good idea today, I probably would say no, unless, yeah, I don't know.
But an 18-year-old isn't going to ask. They're just going to do it.
Exactly. And that's what I did. So yeah, like my friends and I, we toured the States without work visas or anything. We, you know, just drove across the border with a van full of gear and merch and played a couple weeks of shows. So if crossing an international border under false pretenses is crazy, then there you go.
Yeah.
lots of hilarious situations, you know, like, oh, come, you should come party and hang out and you could crash on my tattoo shop's floor. And
yeah. It's not nearly as glamorous as a lot of people have made it out to be, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, there is something very cool about showing up in Trenton, New Jersey, and there's 50 kids ready to hear your music that you've never met.
Yeah.
So I love that I've had that experience, and yeah, lots of crazy thing happens. But I think that has kind of set me up now where what other people might think is weird, I'm like, yeah, well, I've done all sorts of strange stuff. So yeah, that's all right. But yeah, I mean, in terms of producing, like I've recorded, I recorded this one local band of a friend of mine who are kind of experimental. And the vocalist, just like while we were recording vocals, was like stripped down to his underwear and running around the studio screaming. And yeah, like, but it's art, man. Like you gotta
live the song.
Sometimes I guess if that's what it takes to get you to the performance you want, then that's what you're going to do.
Thank you for not mentioning my name, Sam. I appreciate that. We'll keep that experience to ourselves.
Yeah. We don't have to share that one. We'll keep that for the OnlyFans.
Oh, nice. How do you like it? Like, I know you've got a home studio. So does that sometimes, do you prefer, like, does that sometimes get in the way? Like you have all these strangers coming in, and I mean, obviously not during COVID and stuff. I get that, but it's a big commitment when you open up your home or at least a piece of it to other people. And has that been a challenge for you and Melissa or?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it definitely influenced our real estate decisions. So when we first got married, we had a house that we bought, like a 1.5 story type thing. And I had my studio in the basement and she taught music lessons out of the main floor. And what that meant is that every day of the week, we had either someone in the basement or someone in our living room waiting for their kid for piano lessons. Right.
Right.
And it only took us a couple of years to go, we both want to keep doing these things, but this isn't working. You know, I don't want to be like cooking dinner with a parent sitting there who I've never met before going, oh, bacon ribs, those smell good.
Yeah.
That happened. And so, yeah, we sold that house and we bought an investment property with a few apartments, and we live in one and we work out of another.
Oh, perfect.
So now we have this kind of segregation where, yes, it's still our house, and that does, you know, introduce some very small issues, but it's much less than having someone in my living room. It's now they're in the apartment below my house.
Right.
A separate entrance, totally separate.
Yeah.
So that has helped a ton.
Yeah. That makes sense. Now, you were doing some work with Safe as Houses. They've been getting lots of play as well, right?
Yeah. So I recorded their second album and the EP they released after that. And then I produced and mixed their third album.
Fantastic. Have you had experience with, because now, I mean, music is so transportable. I was joking before about our buddy, Steve Lehman, and I know he does some work with guys out in LA, and it just, you know, he doesn't have to be somewhere. So are you finding that you're able to get contracts or work from people outside of the KW area, and you don't even have to leave the comfort of your own place?
Yeah. So most of the work that I'm doing right now is remote or semi-remote.
Okay.
Just because, yeah, I'm not having people in the studio for COVID. So yeah, I mean, I definitely have some consistent clients that are from the States, but a lot of the work I do is still local, even though I keep it remote, but most of the people I work with are right in town.
Right. It's a pretty talented area. Can you speak to that? Cause it's, I know KW's got a pretty rich and storied musical history from Pop the Gator. And I'm hoping that Maxwell's Music House reopens and gets going again. So, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent in this area there. And I think there has been for a very long time. I mean, my experience with that was, you know, when I was growing up, there were all these local bands. Like there were tons of, you know, I was, you know, 13, and there were 17 and 8 year olds in bands. And there was tons of these high school bands, you know, playing punk music, rock music, metal music, everything. So I would go to local shows every weekend, all ages shows,
right?
Sometimes more than once a weekend. And that was just this crazy community of people trying things and just doing it and making it happen, even though no one was making any money and bylaws were being broken and all that sort of stuff. And so for me, that, you know, I grew up just thinking that, like, oh, well, if you're a musician, you're going to be in a band that's going to play shows, and you're going to do a DIY thing, and you're going to play in a basement, and you're going, like, that's just part of it.
Right.
And now there aren't many high school bands. Like I still play in a independent rock post-punk kind of thing. And normally, like 10 years ago, there would be a high school band on every show, right? It'd be an all ages show, and there'd be a bunch of kids from high school opening. Maybe even the first two bands would be from high school. And now that just isn't the case, but there is a lot of talent. So it's this weird, like, I think maybe bands aren't cool anymore, and now the new thing is just being an artist. So yeah, in this area, there's no shortage of really good singers, really good songwriters.
Right.
And there's, so Sam, what's the band that you're playing with? What's the name of your band?
Ah, so we're kind of in a little redevelopment period.
Okay.
Kind of starting from the ground up, just, you know, why not? But the band that I was playing with up until COVID was called Sundiver.
Okay.
There's music out. You can check it on YouTube and stuff like that. You know, it's like alt rock, kind of gloomy stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, like,
that's,
you know,
a nice promo. Kind of gloomy stuff.
Totally. Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, you know, guys going through like a band member change, or are you going through a stylistic change, or all of the above?
All of the above. Yeah. So yeah, we've got a new singer, local guy, went to high school in this area. He's a great lyricist, great singer. And we decided to kind of just start from the ground up and make, I always feel weird making a singer sing another singer's songs.
Right.
There's some, even if that the original singer didn't necessarily write them, there's just something weird about that to me. So I just always say, yeah, screw it, we'll start from the beginning. I kind of like that anyway. That's the fun part, figuring out what you want to sound like. So yeah, we are, you know, it's the same elements in terms of the guitar, bass, drums, and then and we're playing with similar tones and things like that, but the songwriting approach is definitely different.
Very cool. Kind of fun to rebrand. So we don't even have a new name, or not yet?
I think we do, but
we're not ready to release it to the world.
Yet. Okay. They're not. The world's not ready for us. I think that's.
Andrew, do you have any suggestions of new names for Sam? Just in
case. You know what? I'll be honest. It seems like Sam has the name. He's just not telling us the name.
No, I get that.
I'll tell you the
like, name. I'm thinking probably Bubbles and Rainbows, but
that's pretty close.
Yeah.
You're in the right area of
like
the...
if we're talking rock post-punk, that
did you miss the part where he said gloomy?
That seems gloomy. Like it. Okay, gloomy.
Bubbles and Rainbows.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe that's not the name.
That's a bit of a stretch.
Here, I'll run it by you guys. How about that? This is what we're working with right now. I think we're gonna go with Slow Sky.
Slow Sky.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, you know, we're from Ontario. Ontario in the fall, especially right today, you get these really like slow, cloudy skies that just kind of creep across the horizon. And there's something very like, to me, that's kind of Ontario.
Yeah, completely.
I get that.
Yeah.
I get
that. So yeah, that's what we're working with right now. That's
I like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's there's a bit of a dark element there too to that. So that's kind of
That's what I was thinking.
Well, you said rainbows, and I was like, kind of like that's.
Yeah, we're almost there.
No,
either way, you're looking up.
Yeah, I suppose. Exactly. Don't encourage him, Sam. Please.
Welcome to the stage, Slow Sky.
By encouraging him, I'm like somehow discouraging you. And that's the thing.
that's really wow. The thing.
Jeez. Why did I think a podcast was a good idea? I didn't actually, Andrew. You thought a podcast was a good idea.
And here we are, nonetheless.
And here we are. So here's a theory, Sam. What do you think of this? Because I know that the statistics at universities right now, they're certainly seeing a lot more females going to universities than males. And I know the stats have changed in terms of how many girls are picking up guitars, which I love. I think there's more, but I think traditionally more guys have gone in towards guitars and drums and stuff. But I think, so in speaking, I'm just trying to address this issue where you said, I don't know why there's not as many high school bands as there may have used to be. I kind of think that one of the reasons is I think Fortnite sort of took a whole chunk of these teenage boys that traditionally would have got together and, hey, you play drums, I play guitar, let's get together. And it just kind of deviated them to we can just stay in each other's, we'll just stay in my room, but we'll socialize and we'll do this other thing. So, cause they're starting
maybe record it.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know about that, but I mean, they're starting to see sort of the effects of that one generation that Fortnite really kind of took away, you know? So maybe that's it.
The Fortnite generation.
I mean, there's certainly something to be said about having to leave your house to have fun.
Right.
Just as a baseline thing, like, you know, I can sit here, you know, if we're talking about 15, 20 years ago, you know, it was, I could sit here at home and watch TV. I could have a friend over and do that, or we could go somewhere. It wasn't, I could pop online and have all of my friends play a game right now together. You could do that, but it wasn't the same as it is now. You know, it was like you were chatting to them, you were typing, not a lot of
real time.
Yeah. So
4K. And
so for me, it was like, what are the things that I wanted to have? What are the things I wanted to do? What are the things I enjoyed when I was that age? And it was, well, I liked music, I liked skateboarding, and I liked hanging out with my friends. So you put those three things together and now you're skateboarding to a community center and seeing a show. I don't know if that is needed anymore. Like, I don't know if kids are like hungry for things to do.
Yeah, I don't know. It gets dangerous. I think that's why I feel like things like School of Rock and Glee and any of those things that encourage kids to come out and develop a skill or a talent that, you know, eventually to me always like my guitar, my music, anything was just cheap therapy. Right. And anytime I was upset, I was able to do this and stuff. And so I think it's so important for those things to stay in existence, because if they weren't there, like, you're right, there's no incentive for somebody to get up and say, oh, maybe I'll go learn how to play guitar.
Yeah. Cause I mean, it's hard. Like, music is challenging. It takes time to learn. I mean, now there's tons of resources. You can pop on YouTube and learn stuff that I wish people told me when I was 13. So there's this weird thing of like, you have to put the effort in to be good at it. There's tons of resources available to do it. So it's kind of like, I'll learn that later. I don't need to. It's not like, whereas before it was like, I want to unlock the secrets of guitar. I want to figure this out. But now yeah. all the information is there. So I wonder if that plays a part in it too. Like it's less cool because of how accessible the information is.
Maybe. And there's all sorts of shortcuts. I talked to my youngest son has taken up playing guitar and I wanted to give him some lessons and start off sort of thing. And he goes on YouTube and the next thing I know, he's playing a song, and which is great because that's what he wanted to do. I want to learn how to play guitar so I can play a song. Mm-hmm. So in his mind, mission accomplished. But I'm like, well, what are you playing? Like, what chord is that? I don't know. I just watched the video.
I can play the song.
I can play the song. I said, but the problem is you can't play with anyone else. Because you get together with your buddies and somebody says, you know, go to the four, go to the one, or go to the C or whatever. You have no clue.
It means nothing to them.
Right. So I'm concerned sometimes that there's this tsunami of information. And Sam, I'm right with you. It would be wonderful if we had that. But then sometimes I'm grateful that we're forced to work it out with our ears too. Sometimes, you know, that.
Yeah, I'm not going to say, yeah, like for me, my musical knowledge is very functional. Like I know what I need to know. Right. I know enough to figure things out, and I know enough to know when there's an issue. And I'm lucky enough to have instincts and ears that allow me to kind of hop in and be okay. But I'm not, you know, I'm not playing on any jazz jams or shredding a solo in the middle of a song, completely improvised. Like,
right.
I'm a lot more calculated. I need a bit more time. So for me, yeah, like I went to lessons, and when I started playing guitar, there wasn't YouTube, but there was tons of tabs.
Sure.
Pretty much any song you wanted to learn, there was a tab for it.
Right.
So for me, it was, well, I was kind of in the same boat. Like, I don't really want to learn this book of playing Ode to Joy. Like I want to go play
something relevant, yeah,
something that I listen to anyway. So yeah, my musical knowledge was kind of split, and it's taken me longer than it should have to kind of learn what I need to know. So there's definitely been times where I'm recording a musician and they're like, oh, just it's this chord, and I'm like, give me 1 second to figure out what notes are in that chord, and I can figure it out. I know enough to figure it out, but I should, like, it would be nice if I just knew it.
Right.
So I like that I don't know some things, because then I try things and there's this mystery. But then at the same time, there are occasions where I wish I knew more because it would make things quicker. So
right.
I kind of ride this line between to some people, I know a lot about music theory, and to some people, I know nothing about music theory.
Oh, I think that's the same for all of us. There's a gazillion people that know a ton more than I do, like a million. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think for me, it just depends on what context I'm in.
Right.
So like young band comes over to record. They're like, wow, this guy knows his stuff about music. But solo artist that grew up playing piano comes over and they're like, does he know what he's talking about? So, you know, there's this this weird line that I tap along.
Yeah, I don't know. I think with you, it was more about, like, I like working with you just for your opinion. You know, we can work around, not that I ever come in with like super technical knowledge. Let's not portray that on this podcast either. If you're truly an ego-free zone, it's nice to walk in and say, Sam, I've got this song, and this is sort of what I'm hearing, the way I think it should go. But I really want you to tell me what you think and the way you hear it, because there's, you know, this might be better. Might be better, right? So, you know, maybe that's the fence line you're working on, right? There's the technical stuff that you could look up, but I think people are kind of hiring you for your ears and your opinion.
Totally. Yeah, that's definitely my marketable skill, is I try and approach creative projects. And don't get me wrong, this took time to develop, but luckily I started young. I've learned to not be precious about things. Mm-hmm. So if something's not good or isn't working, I'm more than happy to start over,
right?
Or throw it out or put it aside and keep it for parts maybe later. I'm more than
happy.
Hear
that, Andrew? You can't be precious. See that, buddy? Can't be precious. No preciousness.
So yeah. When you have a new artist that walks through the door, and maybe they think that they have to know everything about their song, and they're just coming you to essentially press record and put it all together, and not knowing that there's all the pieces of your tracking and your mixing and the producing overall. Do you ever find that it's difficult to then give your opinion to a new artist?
No. No. But I also, I don't love taking on projects where I'm just there to hit record.
Not for sure.
I like to be involved. Not like it's not even that I want to have control. It's more that I want to explore things and make sure that we're capturing the right thing. And I won't know that unless I've got my hands in it.
Yeah. And I think that's probably the best for the artist as well too.
Yeah. Like I might end up not making any changes, but now that we've sat down and talked about it as if I could, I'm, you know, elbow deep in the emotional context. I understand where it's coming from. I know what they're trying to get at. And I have talked through their thought process on how they got there.
Right.
And now it makes it a lot easier for me to recreate it because I know the why. I understand why it needs to be that way. So for me, if I'm meeting a new artist, the first thing is going to be a really long conversation and trying to figure out who they are, what they're trying to do. And that's, it's newer to me in terms of a practice, but it's made the biggest difference in my work.
That's great.
For sure.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's a good approach. More like a grassroots stuff, right? So that you know what's happening.
Yeah. If I'm going to properly represent the artist's vision and present it in a way that I like and they like, yeah, I need to be in it with them. I need to know what they're pulling from, what they're thinking of, what they're hearing in their head. And they might not be equipped necessarily to communicate that with me. So I need to develop that language with them.
Well, you certainly did a good job with Amanda. And she spoke about that too, about the process of, you know, let's just sit down and I'm going to tell you where this song came from, which informed a lot of her choices and then by extension informed a lot of yours. And so I think this approach is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, like with Amanda, it was, if I'm going to help write a song, I don't want my lines to sound different than your lines. Like I don't want people to go, Sam wrote that line.
Right,
right.
And for that to happen, I really need to be in the emotional space that song's coming from.
Yeah.
So that I can contribute something that makes sense and that fits. And obviously, depending on the song, that emotional context will change and the weight of the emotional information in the lyrics will be more or less. Like if you're writing a dance tune, the, you know, emotional weight of one line probably matters less than if you're writing a piano ballad. So you kind of have to balance these things and figure out, is this an emotionally driven song? Is this a energy driven song? Like, where is this? What is this song trying to do? And then talk through so that I can get there to help build it from the ground up instead of just coming in and polishing it up.
I think if there's any musicians or artists that are actually listening to this podcast or once it gets posted, I think that would be more of an attractive element to them, you know, as being part of a collaborative process than, you know, some sort of prepackaged pablum that where you are just pressing record. So I think that's pretty cool. Now you've listened to probably Amanda's episodes. You know that at the end we do a lightning round where you are responsible for answering some quick questions. You don't even have to come up with the answers. We give you the answer. You just have to choose one of them. And it is a highly inaccurate way of our listeners getting to know who Sam Hillifer is. So Andrew is the guy that does the speed round. Andrew?
Oh, here we go.
Oh, wow. All right.
Okay. So like I might give you, as an example, I might say vampires or werewolves. And then you just tell us which one that you choose.
Oh, I'm so bad at this.
So no, I mean, the answer's there. You just have to
say
that.
Don't get uptight about it. We're going to get there. We're going to get there together.
We'll do one and you'll know why I'm bad at it.
Okay. So let's start. Mandolin or banjo?
Oh my gosh. Like, okay. I'm going to tell you what my brain's doing right now so you understand why when I say I'm bad at this.
Okay.
So
I want to hear.
I mean, I would say that they're probably equal. It's completely situational dependent. It's going to be context dependent. It depends if I'm playing it or someone else is playing it.
Sam, you're overthinking this.
Yes.
I can tell you right now. Just
look, I think I just heard banjo.
You walk into a room, there's a banjo and there's a mandolin. Which one do you pick up?
I pick up the mandolin.
There you go.
Yeah.
See? We got there. Now, Amanda.
I think I have to interrupt for a second. I think mandolin might have been one of the names I used to call your wife. As
probably.
I recall. Yeah. It took me a while to come around to Melissa. I'm not even sure I'm there yet. But anyway.
Yeah, well, you said it there.
I did, but I feel bad that I did. It's gonna go right to her head. Anyway, all right. Second question, Andrew.
Amanda Kynes' Maleficent voice or Lance's caterwauling?
Well, that's unfair to Lance.
Yeah, thank you. Nice question, by the way.
You're welcome. Let's just say Amanda.
Okay, Amanda.
I quit.
Home studio or separate space?
Separate space-ish.
Eight-tracker tape.
Tape.
Carnegie Hall in New York or the Grand Ole Opry.
Did you say Carnegie?
Carnegie. Carnegie Hall in New York or the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville.
I think Carnegie Hall.
Virtual concert or a live gig?
Live gig.
Lightsaber or blaster?
Oh, man. Lightsaber because it's cool, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. Eric Clapton or Chuck Berry?
Oh, God. Can I say a third? Like what?
yeah, give me a third. Give me a third.
John Mayer. John Mayer, man.
Clearly, you don't like those two. No, it's John Mayer.
I like them both. And I think that John Mayer has a bit of both.
I can see that. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, if I just had to pick, I'd probably say Chuck Berry because that's fun.
Gibson ES or Les Paul?
Gibson what?
ES.
Do I know
any? So basically, yeah, I think so. He's in a hollow body versus a Les Paul.
Oh, like a casino style.
Yeah, thing. Yeah.
Definitely that. I don't like Les Pauls that much.
Okay, there you
and
go.
And last question, Mumford & Sons or the Lumineers?
Well, Lumineers, I think.
That's fantastic. Thank you for that rapid round.
I feel like we owe Sam a beer. I think yeah, we stressed maybe the boy
three.
Out.
Maybe we should have sent over three beer beforehand just to kind of relax and get into the space.
That was so hard.
It was tough.
Do you understand when I say I'm not good at this?
Yeah.
You know what? I find that this is probably the toughest. It's meant to be the easiest part of the show. And every single time we see people that are like, they're squishing their eyes together. You see drips of sweat coming off their forehead.
That there's no wrong answer to this. Yeah. This is, you're going to get 100% of these right.
No, because I'm going to be going to sleep tonight and I'm going to go, Chuck Berry.
I should have chose a blaster. Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. See, when you ask me lightsaber blaster, I'm like, lightsaber's super cool, but blaster is just way more practical.
Yeah, it's efficient.
Now, Sam, how can people find you?
Oh, people can find me samhilliford.com. You could just walk out your front door and hoot twice like a barn owl.
Does that work?
You'll find out.
All right.
I'm walking out my front door right now.
Yeah, samhilliford.com is where there's, you know, you can contact me through that. You can see some of the stuff I'm doing through there. Yeah, that's probably the easiest way.
Awesome. Fantastic. Sam, thanks for doing the show today. I really appreciate it. We'll wrap it up, but thanks buddy, I appreciate it. We're gonna chat, you and I, shortly.
Sounds good.
All right,
that's been another episode of Backstage Lowdown.
Yeah, look at you wrapping the show up.
One of these days we'll get this right.
Backstage Lowdown.